Thecycle of Ne Society 205. Philosophically, an exudation of the mortal substances, is all. Timotelli dissipated with the decay of forms. Consequently, he who has placed all his faith in this decaying part shall experience mentally the blight of death, for he shall behold the disintegration of that which he has pleased to term himself. If, however, he has established his rational and divine part as real, he shall remain unmoved when its inferior vehicle is dissipated, and because his faith is vested in reality shall dwell forever in rapturous contemplation of permanence. Life and death are measured by our belief, permanence is determined by our consciousness, and perfect immortality is achieved by perfect realization. Strangest of all, perfect immortality is synonymous with ultimate dissolution, and of all the illusions that must go, not the least is the illusion of individuality. Having completely mastered this, the last phase of death is conquered, for as long as man believes in individuality, he fears that unknown but certain ultimate when individuality is dissolved back again into the universal state. It is strange, but true that all the things man fears become the instruments of his liberation. Man fears the loss of individuality, yet perfection is not attainable without it. Man fears death, yet death is simply the necessary polarizing of life that he may endure, until he has learned to exchange the living death of form for the deathless life of spirit. If it were not for the opportunity that death gives us to go behind the scenes occasionally, we might become so obsessed with the dream play of mortal life that we would never wake up to its unreality. The process of alternating manifestation between the visible and invisible spheres of the inferior universe is erroneously termed metempsychosis. A swinging pendulum has been employed to symbolize that monotonous motion of the unawak and soul which results in the phenomena of successive lives and deaths. In the East Indian classics it is written that certain is death for the living and certain is life for the dead, but though the wheel spins incessantly, by the very nature of its motion it ends where it began. When the philosophers describe the descent of the soul into generation, they do not mean what 206 lectures onancientphilosophy is now termed incarnation, but rather that the rational part has become immersed in the substances of a generated and generating world where it must remain until through the liberation of its innate rationality it escapes from the tangled web of sense and circumstance. Pythagoras tells us that the sphere of Hades or Pluto extends downward from the Milky Way through the rings of the zodiac, the orbits of the planets, and the spheres of the elements. Pluto's domain is therefore synonymous with matter, not only matter that is physical but also its invisible counterpart from which the so-called invisible world is fashioned. The sphere of generation merely signifies that inferior part of nature, wherein manifestation depends upon the generation of vehicles. Generation is limited to the world of forms in that all forms are generations, being the temporary vehicles of ungenerated and immovable souls. Physical bodies as we know them are generations in that they are the fashionings of an invisible agent who creates them for the peculiar workings of its will. The fact that the soul can fabricate a physical body is proof itself that the soul is manifesting upon the level of generation. And incarnation is that process whereby the spiritual nature establishes itself upon the level of generation in order to become the formatter of innumerable corporeal vehicles. Having assumed the idea of generation, the soul is capable of generating, and bodies are its generations. In order to generate, the soul becomes individualized and ultimately abstractly personalized. Therefore it is said arcanely that there is a continuity of personality throughout the cycle of incarnation, but this personality is the sole personality posited at the apex, or causal point, of the triangle of the generating sphere. The ancient philosophers affirmed that 777 physical earth lives constitute the incarnation of the human soul. Each of these earth lives is divided into a physical and superphysical part, life and death, occupying the middle ground between the spiritual part and its generated vehicles. The soul hangs suspended from its own cause, and from it are suspended the physical personalities which manifest for a day, only to be dissolved by death into their primordial state. From this it is evident that the physical phenomena of life and death have little effect upon the spiritual status of the individual, for this status is actually measured by the degree to which he has disentangled his soul from the illusion of generation, and has no reference to the corporeal or incorporeal condition of his body. The true fall of man was the descent of his soul into the cycle of necessity or sphere of generation, and his true resurrection is the ascent of the soul to its former state of non-involvement. Thus, life both before and after death is simply an allegorical ceremony during which, as in the pageantry of the mysteries, a curious ritualism is performed which recapitulates upon the physical level the entire story of man's super physical dilemma. The bodies shadow forth the rationality of the soul. While the idea of generation is upon the soul, the bodies manifest the qualities of materiality. When the soul shakes off the drowsiness of the state of generation, the physical ical personalities which it objectifies manifest in an idealistic and spiritualized manner. The consciousness of man is said to exist in three general states: in an unawakened state, an awakening state, and an awakened state. Those whose souls are wholly immersed in the illusion of form are declared to be asleep. Although they may manifest activity in the phenomenal sphere, this activity, being of their outer and not their inner parts, is not regarded as an evidence of wakefulness. Such souls are symbolized as lying asleep throughout the span of life. Occasionally they are depicted as covered with cobwebs, as symbolic of the weaving of their own fancies. Their bodies also are partly buried in that dust which collects upon all inert objects. This dust presents that inactivity which soon dulls the perception of the unwary, but which the just man shakes off by endeavor. Those to whom beauty means nothing, in whom there is no desire to better an imperfect state, who live but to gratify the appetites of the flesh, are the sleeping ones who, after passing unawake and through the span of physical existence, enter into the invisible world, there to lie in rows still sleeping as they slept while in the physical world. After a time these sleeping souls. 208 Lectures on ancient philosophy. Drift back again, take upon themselves bodies, sleep through another life cycle, and continue this procedure until finally innate divinity, by the agency of some dire necessity, is aroused and animated to cast off its robes of lethargy. The second group, the wakening souls, are those in whom realization, while not perfected, has become an element in the cultural life. Physical existence has come to be recognized as a period of endeavor through which the divine potentialities must be liberated from the winding sheet of matter. Through the periods of both life and death, such a soul is consecrated to the attainment of wisdom. All change is regarded as fresh port unity, and with faith in ultimate perfection the seeker eagerly pursues the quest of self. The third group, the awakened souls, are those who have cast off the grave clothes of limitation and made their escape from generation, exchanging the alternation of mortal life for the continued awareness of the inner existence. They are masters not only of the so-called terrestrial state, but having liberated their souls from the idea of generation, they ascend to that truly incorporeal world where the soul is united with the true substances of its own being and where, dwelling in its own state, it is said to abide in a state of perfect felicity. Let us next consider the role played by love in the periodic comings and goings of the soul while in the state of generation. The law of the intellect is reason, the law of the soul is love, and the law of the body is generation. It follows that while each of these spheres is amicable toward its own qualities, when these qualities are combined to form a compound, friction results. Paracelsus tells us that the elementals, or nature spirits, live for hundreds of years because, composed of a single principle, there is the minimum of friction between their parts. To reason, established in its own essence and functioning AC, according to its own laws, love is thus inexplicable. Likewise, the physical nature, which is established in and exists through generation, views both reason and love as antagonistic. The plans of reason are frequently thwarted by the claims of love, and both reason and love are often overwhelmed by the dialectical of NE Society 209. Tates of the animal nature, though reason unfailingly reminds the latter of its own insufficiency. Hence, the inconstancy of human attitudes is primarily due to the lack of a common denominator. Plato defined love as the longing of diversity for unity, the desire of parts to be brought together to form wholes, the instinctive urge of all creatures toward a perfect state. Realizing that reality increases in proportion as diversity is overcome, the rational soul rejoices in the union of incomplete natures, for even the least perfect of such unions contributes to the unity of the whole. The same urge that first causes souls to come into generation and unite themselves with corporeal substances later causes them, after they dissociate themselves from corporeal substances, to rise toward and mingle themselves with spiritual reality. As the essential unity of reality is apparently broken up by its descent into the sphere of generation, a condition ensues. Common only, however, to such as have assumed the reality of diversity. Laboring under the illusion of separateness, the fractional parts function in the consciousness of isolation. Probably no feeling can sweep over the nature of man more terrifying than that which causes him to feel absolutely alone. This al-oneness means the stifling of all expression. Joy and sorrow alike must be relieved by expression, otherwise they infect the temperament with a curious disease which Robert Burton rather inadequately terms melancholy. This feeling of isolation is invariably accompanied by one of utter hopelessness, for man is essentially a social animal. While his unenlightened animal sociability causes him to seek the companionship of the phantoms of matter, still it is a necessary though imperfect expression of that spiritual quality which will ultimately unite him with the whole order of being. Physical life may be likened to a gloomy dungeon where those convicted of materiality sit in solitary confinement, each in his own little cell. Like the prisoner of Chillon, who vainly longed for the blue sky and the comrades of yore, the soul of man locked in the life of form yearns for companionship and